So, George, last time, when we spoke yesterday, you told me about your three older sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And now, why don't you tell me about your younger sister and younger brother as well?
Okay, well, as I mentioned yesterday, I had three older sisters, Julia, Margaret, and Rose. There were spaced like 3 years apiece between each birth. My younger sister was Claire, who became a graduated from high school also, became a nurse, and went to New York City and worked in Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City in the Cancer Center when it was first. Cancer was in those days was kind of a almost a new disease or something like that, and she decided to get into that field to work and became a nurse and treated a number of local people even. It came from Lansford and all that who were, I remember one case where Mr. Weiss, a local merchant up on Ridge Street, had a son, Joseph, and Joseph had throat cancer, and they sent him down at night, and Claire more or less adopted him down there and took care of him, you know, and as a nurse would do. And Mr. Weiss would always get a hold of my mother, and he said, "Look, anytime you need any clothes or anything, then you come up to the store and take anything you want, you know." But she was a very nice person. My mother had developed cataracts in her eyes, and she decided to come back and take care of my mother when she was going through her operation, which was in Colville Hospital. And during the course of her taking care of my mother and all that, the operation was performed by a Dr. Hauser from Tamaqua. And Dr. Hauser saw this young woman taking care of her mother like the way it was, you know, beautiful girl and everything else, single. He had just lost his wife through a death. She died. He saw this beautiful girl and all that, and he became very attached to her and all that, and started courting her and all that. And eventually they got married, and she moved over to Tamaqua, and they had a big home there. He also had an airplane. He liked to fly. And he had two daughters. I would say they were in their late, one was in their late teens, one was in their early 20s. The younger girl, after she got out of high school, decided she wanted to be a stewardess. So one day he had an operation or something like that, and he couldn't. She had to be in New York to take this a test or whatever it was, or fill out the forms for the stewardess job. And they hired a friend of his was a pilot, a Mr. Christman from Palmer was a pilot, and they went to the three of them, Mr. Christman, my sister, and his daughter, went to New York. They had the interview and all that, and on the way back, they were landing in Lehighton, and for some reason, he never made the landing field. He hit a cement building, and both of them were killed. The daughter was she was only 34 at the time, and kind of devastated my mother, you know. I mean, she used to sit back on this back porch here and cry every night. She was so close to her, and when she did die a few years later, she just died of a broken heart, you know, just on account of that. And that was my mother. She was very sentimental too. And I think we mentioned too before about how the men kind of dominated the women and all that. And that was the case here. You know, the women were more or less afraid to do many things on their own. Well, if it was all right with the men, they did it. And it's still a case around here. I notice a lot of people my age, too, where the men dominate the women, you know, more or less.
Can you recall some examples, some incidents from your growing up where you could see that going on with your father and mother?
Well, mostly in buying things, you know. I mean, she couldn't go out and buy anything. She used to like the Hershey Kisses, you know. And she almost had to go out, sneak to buy them and hide them at home here so he wouldn't find them. And then she could go and have a couple Hershey Kisses at night, you know. Just a couple pieces of chocolate, you know. He never beat her or anything like that. But it was, when it came to spending money and all that, and buying things and all that, well, it was up to him whether he made all decisions, whether to renovate the house or do this or like that. She had no say in that, really. And that was, you know, when you have to go out and buy Hershey Kisses and all that in order to enjoy them and all that and hide them and all that. It's kind of an extreme thing. But I don't think it was unusual around here, no?
No, I think my sense is from some of the other interviews.
My mother had a good friend right down the street there, the Pekariks, you know. And they had a big family. In fact, Julius, well, we used to call him Dula, he was my age. We went to school together, we graduated together, and she would come up here and they would talk on the porch here and all that, and her father was, I think he was even worse than my father, you know, as far as being dictatorial too, you know. And in fact, I think her main pleasure was coming up and talk to my mother, really, you know. They were a little better off because he was a pretty good bootlegger, you know. He'd make whiskey right in his backyard, you know, and sell it. And when the mines weren't working and all that, he would sell the moonshine, you know. And they also had a little store in the back, a little room about this size, and they would have canned goods and things like that for the people to buy. And he would sell the whiskey out of that store also, too. So they were a little better off. But she was in the same boat. And they also came from the same town, too, from Kudloci in Czechoslovakia. So that was about the extent of my mother's life, too, you know. And like I said, she was very devastated, though, by this death. In fact, so was I. It was you can't sleep at night and things like that. And
how much older than Claire were you?
I was about 4 years. There was another gap of about 3 or 4 years there, you know. And she was a very beautiful person, though. And Rose was very, Rose was so happy when she got married. I remember the day she got married. She was married down in Chester, out south of Philadelphia. And after the ceremony and all that, and she said, "Oh, I'm so happy for Claire. She found somebody, you know, and a professional person, a nice person, and everything else." And she was so happy for her and all that.
How long was it between Claire's marriage and the
just
the
2 years?
Accident?
About 2 years. 2 years. Little over 2 years, but it wasn't very long. When you're 34 and this happens, I was working at the Bethlehem Steel at the time, and it was in the afternoon, and over the intercom, someone was calling my name, pick up the phone and all that. Well, I was in a dark room or something like that, couldn't get out right away. Finally, I heard this thing, somebody getting kind of angry up there, "Pick up the phone, you know, pick up the phone." So I finally picked up the phone, and I can't recall who called me. Was it the Undertaker or somebody called me and said, you know, that Claire was in an accident, I better come home, you know. They didn't tell me she was dead. They said she was in a real bad accident. By the time I got home then, you know, everybody was crying and everything else, so I knew, you know, she was dead. But it was one of those things, growing up, you know, that you'll never forget. And especially when it happens to you. You see a lot of deaths and all that, but when it happens to you, remember your family and a nice person, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. And both your parents were still alive.
My father never showed it, you know. I never saw my father cry, really, or anything like that. He was tough. In fact, when he had developed prostate cancer, and you know, he lived to be 89 and all that. He was 84. He had an operation, and I never even heard him complain anything about that. You know, about his. And I knew he was in pain because he would sit there almost where you are there. We'd be watching. I'd be sitting over there, and when he retired at 65, he would just wheeze, you know. You know, the breath, you could hardly stand it. In fact, it'd be annoying after a while. You figure, well, okay, Pop, I'll see you tomorrow or something like that, you know. And he would just wheeze and wheeze and wheeze, and then he developed prostate cancer later on. I never heard him complain, though. He used to carry a bottle here so he wouldn't have to walk up and down the stairs so he could urinate in it, And he never complained. He never showed much emotion, you know. And, I don't know if he was just tough that way or what it was, but or his makeup. But he never, when my mother died, he just went through the things and through the motions of going through the funeral and all that. And life went on for him, you know. He was devoted to her. I mean, you know, I never saw him do anything, holler at her or yell at her or be mean to her or anything like that. It's just that, and he wasn't a big man. He was kind of little, you know. But my mother really didn't have much of a life, except the family, you know, and cooking, baking, doing the dishes. Going to church later on in her life, then she decided, you know, that she figured the heck with it, she's going to go to church and all that, and she decided to go again. And regardless of what my father said, and that was her life, really. And she just lived for when the children would come home, the daughters, you know, or whatever. And then when Margaret was living next door, they were very close. And Margaret's first child was born next door and all that. He only lived 18, I think he was only 18 months old, and he died. His name was Frank. He was named after his father. And that was kind of a, you know, hard take, too, in the beginning.
That would have been the first grandchild.
First grandchild, yeah, died, too. So I imagine most families they go through all these steps where people heartaches here and good times and things like that. And
did your mother have a lot of good women friends?
Not many. No, Mrs. Pekarik, you know, and then of course Mrs. Zonk, neighbors, just, you know, they never had a car, never drove, never really went anywhere. In the early days, my father was a hunter, though. He would get out with his friends and all that. And of course, when the mines were working, he would work. Well, the first stop he would be at the bar, you know. You'd get his up at Canyuk's, up near the Amvets now. That was a pretty good watering place for them, and they would stop there and have their shot and their beer and all that. So he would get out, and then he had his hunting friends and all that, and then he was like treasurer of the society, you know, for the insurance society and all that, Slovak society. So they would meet here maybe once a month or something like that, too, you know. So he had friends, but my mother never did. She really, kind of an isolated life, you know. And
do you think that was a little bit general for men and women of your parents' generation?
I think so, yeah. I think, especially. I don't know if it would apply, say some of the Welsh or the English or the Irish, you know, because I think they came over before, you know. But when you can't read English and you can't write English and you can't be involved, they had a radio. Rose bought them a radio. In fact, there's the radio there. Rose bought them that Philco. You see it back there, that old Philco stand-up radio.
So large, I was looking for something much smaller.
No, that's a radio. Yeah. Well, that was their main form of entertainment later on. They would sit around here in the evening and, you know, listen to Amos and Andy and Gabriel Hayter in the news and things like that.